Hello and welcome to Competitive Podcast, episode 19. We're going to talk about premier events today. But with me today is just David.
Hey.
Hey. Yeah. So I sent out a call a few weeks ago, like a week ago maybe, for potentially new hosts, and I don't think anybody's responded yet. So I haven't heard any responses online. So hey, if you guys want to be a new co-host of Competitive Popcast, just shoot me a message and we'll do a tryout or something. Anyway, let's go ahead and talk about the news. The big news for Popper is Premier Events lowered their minimum entry from 65 down to 33.
Yeah, so now they're actually capable of firing, unlike before where they... You'd get in the queue and you'd sit there and you'd be like, all right, it's at 30 with 30 seconds to go. And then it just wouldn't fire and then everyone would leave. And then there'd be a big thing in the chat about how much Wizards hates Popper. Because yes. Every time all the players would get really mad.
Yeah, for sure.
But apparently Wizards doesn't hate Popper because they've reduced the number to a sustainable amount, I believe. There's enough grinders and players who like the format enough to just contribute to enough tickets of time.
Yeah.
To doing it, so.
Okay, well, anyway. Yeah, that's pretty good. I've seen it firing, the premier events firing about 40 each, roughly.
Yeah. So. Which is actually great, because as I've talked about before with, like, the reasons why I don't think premier events are firing is just the value wasn't very good. Like when they start firing at 65, you're like, if you're the average player, you're expected to lose money on it. But if it's like 40-ish or so, your value is actually pretty reasonable. So it's good. I think it just makes so much more sense for Wizards to lower it because they'll probably enough people will come in at the end to raise it up because enough people at the start will be like, ooh, I can actually have a pretty good shot at making money. This isn't going to be just a lot of Popper, possibly for nothing. So.
Yeah. What was it, though? The payouts changed quite a bit, though, right?
Oh, they did? I didn't even know.
Yeah. The payouts changed a fair amount. It's now it's you have max amount of people who can enter at 64, right? So what they did now was they changed the payouts for everything non-standard, I think, for premier events. And your payouts for Popper premier events are the only payout up to 16th place, right? So.
Oh, did they pay out lower than that before?
Yeah. They used to pay out top 32, I believe, and I'm going to check that out before I...
Well, I think
I confirm.
It's pretty understandable that they would reduce it to that. And I guess wherever the payments are right now, I feel like they're about as reasonable as they should be. I don't know. Like the fact that I mean, you can if you basically if you're in the top half, you get your money back. And then if you're in the top eight, you're actually making money. And so it's like, you know, I guess I sort of expect that in a tournament, if I'm in the top half, I should probably get my money back roughly. That seems about right.
Yeah.
So it's whatever it is, whether or not it's good or bad EV, it's close enough where I think people are like, you know, this is reasonable. This is worth my time. And they reduced a round too, which I think actually is very helpful. By doing this restriction of players.
It's a max of 6 rounds of Swiss. That's pretty nice. So the payouts are a little bit different than your standard event, than your standard premier events, but it's fine. Like the events are firing. I would prefer to not have to play 6 rounds, but well, it's what we got, so let's play it. And you know, I topped 3-1, so
yeah, congrats to you.
Yeah, thanks.
How many did you do?
I did 2. I did the one on, I think, Saturday morning, and then the one on Sunday morning. And Saturday morning I 1-2 dropped, and Sunday morning I ended up going 5-1 in the Swiss and won the won round one of the finals, lost round two. So yeah, it was pretty nice. Got 12 packs for that, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, that's I don't know, Theros, it's like 30, so you put in entries twice, so you made 10 tickets throughout this weekend.
Oh yeah, I made a fair amount more than that, but not playing Pauper. Pauper I played, you know, I made that much. Been breaking pretty even in Pauper. You know, mostly been playing Delver, but I've also been, you know, playing various other decks when I get sick of Delver mirrors.
That's what a lot of this is these days.
Yeah, it's pretty much a pain in the butt. What have you been playing?
Well, I got to play two premier events this last weekend. I don't know how sustainable that number will be for me in the long term, but it looks like last weekend and probably next weekend I'll be able to do two as well. This weekend maybe just one. But they are long enough and fun enough where I decided I'd stream one. So I streamed one, and I think you watched that. And in both tournaments, I played Azorius Skitty. And in both tournaments, I top 16, which was kind of a disappointment because I wanted a top 8, you know, really badly. And in one of them, I basically was in contention to top 8. And then you were there when the obulate bug prevented yeah. that from happening for me. I tried to blow up my opponent's obulate. Because it was the best line. It really was. Like, best yeah. line was blow up his obulate, hope the bug's fixed, get my guy back, and then I'm probably 50-50 to win, I felt like. But if I don't blow it up and don't get my guy back, I'm probably like, you know, I'm like 20% to win. And if I don't do that line at all and just go a different route, I'm probably like 30% to win. So I just felt that the best course of action was, you know, blow up the obulate, hope the bug's fixed, gain my life back, and then try to go from there. And unfortunately, cards didn't work how they were supposed to, and so I, you know, couldn't pull off the 80% to win at that point I needed, and ended up getting Garyed out, even with a Circle of Protection blackout. The way he was playing, I could tell he had, like, a Gary train going
yep.
in his hand, so... It was really unfortunate, but if that guy lands, it's huge.
I say it affected the way that you played the rest of the game, right? Because you had a Core Sanctifiers, so it was basically one extra white mana for you to blow up the Obliette, or the Obliette, and yeah. You know, you get your Lone Missionary back, which is what was exiled with the Obliette. And when you got your Lone Missionary back, you gained 4 life, and then you had like a handful of Dreamstalkers and Core Skyfishers that you could bounce the Lone Missionary back and not get Garyed out. So yeah, it definitely affected the way that you were going to play out the rest of the game and the rest of the event itself. So, you know, I put some people on blast on Twitter about that, like, hey, you know, this is your premier event and you have a major bug here, which prevent somebody from going in the top 8. And by the same realm, you know, Karavex Torch is still broken. You can still counter it for a blue mana without having to pay the extra 2. So, these are both major bugs that are affecting cards that see play in Pauper. And we need to petition people to get these fixed.
Well, word on the street is, and the reason why I saw this was, so the guy who beat me was Megaphone.
Yep.
And he, I just kind of went to his Twitter just to see, like, if he said anything about it or whatever. And apparently earlier in the day, it sounds like he kind of just picked up Mono Black that day and, like, wasn't really dinking around with it. Or if he had, no one's blown up his obulate. Because apparently in, like, round one, someone blew up his obulate. It didn't work. And he pinged Worth on it. And so Worth said back, you know, like, well, I have heard that they're actually in the works of fixing this bug. So I do think a bug fix is coming for Obulet. It didn't come fast enough for me. And yeah. the frustrating thing about it, too, and you were listening to me like talk about this is that so we're with where Theros packs are, it's $3 per pack, or yeah, $3 per pack to sell, and you get three packs to if you top 16. And so if I filed for compensation on the event and I don't top 16, I get 10 tickets. But because I did so well, I got three packs back, because I still, like, basically next round I just scooped, because, I mean, me and my opponent both knew we top 16 and there's nothing we could do to really improve our chances. Yeah. So I just scooped him and I got top 16. And so by doing so, by not falling out of top 16, I ended up losing a ticket to their compensation request. So it was pretty, it was like a double kick in the butt on that one. So it's pretty brutal. But, you know, ultimately, my grievances aside, it was a really fun event. Both of them were. The second one was even more fun. I battled back to a 3-3 and got, like, I was 2-3 going into the last round, but all three of my opponents were in the top eight, so I had, like, really good breakers. And I just decided to play it out, won my last one, and then I slipped into the last spot, or second to last spot. So that's just some words of advice to those out there is, you know, play it out, because people are dropping all the time.
Yeah.
And you never know who your opponents were, and that's a huge, huge thing. So 3-3 can get you there, and if you go 500 in an event and get packs back, that's surprisingly good. You know, get your money back.
Yeah.
So, and,
I said that was the same event too, where I played against you in round one.
Yeah, you beat me.
Yeah, I beat you in round one and ended up in, you know, top eight. So I was one of your tiebreakers, which was nice.
Yeah, and Jack Sad was the other, and then an affinity player.
Vagar, I think.
Yeah, Vagar. I normally like the affinity matchup, but I just, you know, sometimes you get shuffled, and that's just what happens.
Yeah, you got pretty flooded in that, I thought. Right? Was it flooded or screwed? Flooded one game, screwed the other?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and usually in that matchup I can handle having one of those happen, but, I mean, you can't, if you have back-to-back games like that, it's just, it's hard to be.
Yep. All right, so moving on. There's Born of the Gods spoilers. Anything caught your eye?
Well, they haven't really released very many commons. I think there's less than 10 right now that have been released. The only two that seem like, you know, someone might play with them is the Nyxborn Shieldmate and the Orus Coast Sun Guide.
Yep.
The Shieldmate's a 1/2 for a Plains. He's an enchantment creature, a human soldier, and he's got Bestow for a Plains and 2 colorless. And then he Holy Strengths the guy, so he gives the enchanted creature +1/+2. I don't think this guy's, like, exceptionally good, but he's a soldier, which is relevant in Pauper. He can help turn on your War Falcons or whatever. His versatility is nice. Versatility is always a really underrated aspect of a card. And sometimes a card that does two different things is much better than either one of the halves. So he might be better than he appears. But I'm not excited about him, even though I said that. And then the other one that's slightly better, and I think we'll actually see a tiny bit of play, I would not be surprised if this makes somebody's list at some point, is Orus Coast Sun Guide. He's a cat monk. He's a 2/2 for a Plains and a colorless, and he has the new mechanic Inspired. So Inspired is whenever something gets untapped, some ability happens. So whenever this guy becomes untapped, you gain 2 life. And in an aggressive deck, like, your guys are going to be untapping all the time. But I've also seen some people dink around with, I think it was a Field Marshal. You know what card I'm talking about?
No, I don't know what Field Marshal is. I'll look it up.
Maybe it's Field Surgeon.
I have seen Field Surgeon before.
I think it's Field Surgeon. Yeah, I always get those cards mixed up. So Field Surgeon says, it's a Plains and a Colorless for a 1/1. tap an untapped creature you control, prevent the next one damage that would be dealt to target creature this turn. Well, this is actually a very good card. You can just start tapping your guys left and right, making them prevented, it prevents like burn damage to them and whatnot, but it's also a good way to make your guys tapped so that you can untap them later. I've seen a few brews. There's a merfolk that's like a 1/2 for 3 mana, and whenever it untaps, you put another 1/1 merfolk token into play. So the untap field surgeon deck is, you know, a tier 4 strategy right now, but maybe with enough inspired or inspiration cards or whatever those are, you'll be able to make this deck take it up to the next level, possibly. So, I mean, that's the brew route I would look to, but this guy is, you know, a bear with an upside, and those do have homes and poppers, so yep. Maybe Oros Coast Sun Guide has a shot. Have you seen any cards?
Yeah, the Oros Coast Sun Guide is the one that I was particularly calling out, because it's a very good sideboard card against, like, Burn or actually even Delver, because, you know, as the Delver player, you kind of have to counter this guy, right? Because you can't really, 2 life gain per turn is kind of hard to beat. It's not incredibly hard to beat, but it's, you know, it makes things more difficult, so. And if you start combining this guy with Springleaf Drum, then his text reads, you know, gain 2 life every turn. So, yeah, that's something you definitely have to consider whenever you're playing this guy. White Weenie is very good against Delver, because Delver can't handle large amounts of life gain and you know, large consistent amounts of life gain, and you kind of don't want to counter him, right? You want to save your counter spells for things like Core Skyfisher and other things that are hard to get rid of, like Bone Splitter. So, yeah. I think I can see this guy making a splash on White Weenie, but...
Yeah, I think he would have a much better chance if he had a more relevant creature type.
Yeah,
if he was a soldier or something like that, I'd expect him to see some play. As it is, because he's like a cat monk, I wouldn't be surprised if he saw play, but I'm not expecting it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that he's a cat monk. There's a theme of cats in Born of the Gods, apparently.
Yeah, they always pop up at random points in time.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about what you've been playing. You're mostly on Azorius. Have you been playing any 2-mans or 8-mans?
I play a lot of 2-mans. Like, a lot of 2-mans. I seldom play 8-mans. But I play a lot of 2-mans because I think they're good testing. And sometimes I like a little bit of competition in my testing. You know, it feels more like I want to win. Like, I actually care and I'm more invested in the game.
Yep.
So I play a lot of 2-mans, and so in that I've been just doing a variety of decks. I always do. I mean, I have sort of a testing approach, which is, you know, start off in the tournament practice room. Once the deck like performs at the level I think is somewhat competitive, I'll bring it over to the 2-mans. And so I actually haven't been finding too many decks that I've been like ultimately excited about, and so, as of late, I've really just been testing, like, decks I've already had in the 2-mans. I did play 1 8-man randomly. The thing that'll get me into an 8-man, really, is if I'm in the situation where I walk into the tournament room, and I'm like, oh, you know, I have a lot of time to kill. Oh, and there's 6 people in the queue, or 5 people. It's pretty much 5 or more. And if there's 5 or more in the queue, I'll jump in. And I did 1, and I won that.
That was pretty nice.
Yeah, it was convenient. But yeah, I've really just done 1. They're just... I've actually... You know, I've had the same thing as you, where you jump in 1, you forget you do it, you know? It's... And then it's like, you're in the middle of, like, double-queuing somewhere else, and suddenly this match pops up, and you're like, oh, God. I signed up for that 7 hours ago, and here it is.
Yeah, I've had that before too.
Yeah, so I just try to stay away from them. I don't really think that they're bad value, you know. And they're, to me, an 8-man is for testing, and for testing alone, but as time has gone on, they've decreased in competitiveness. Like, it's almost like everyone now thinks all their four is testing. So all you're testing against is other people's test decks. And so it's not very useful.
Yeah,
it's like that, or you run into Delver. So if you want to test against Delver, I mean, that's fine.
Yeah.
And it seems like you're running into a lot of Esper Sage decks, but I think it's really just that I think Esper Sage is just very well poised to beat random road decks, and I think it's fine against a lot of other stuff, so the same three Esper Sage pilots you see every day in Maintenance too, so you might run into them.
Yeah. The Esper Sage guys are guys who are always playing that deck and will always play that deck, you know, Raging Flump and there's a few others. I can't remember the other ones, but these are the guys who are always, you know, if I see this guy in the queue, then it's like, well, he's playing Esper Sage. You know, I know that one's a pretty good matchup for me, but I think Esper Sage is there to, like, sort of combat Tron, right? Because Tron seems to have made a small comeback, and Tron really can't beat Esper Sage at all. Like, it just seems highly unlikely that they're ever going to do it.
I think I saw someone do it in one of these tournaments, actually. But that's beside the point. But yeah, I agree, because I don't think it's a very good matchup for them.
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty hard matchup for them, unless the Esper player, like, floods, or, you know, the Tron player, you know, fires off their Pyroblast at exactly the right moment or something like that. They're just not likely to win against Esper. So, anyway, I'm not an Esper pilot. I've played the deck before, but and I've played Tron before, and I can tell you that Esper is definitely not a good matchup from the Tron perspective.
Yeah, I think Esper has a good matchup against a lot of the field. I think it beats Mono Black. I think it beats most of the fringe decks. I think it also... I think it 50-50s a lot of the other matches. Like, I'm pretty sure that... Affinity can beat it. It does beat it, but it's not like auto win for them or anything like that. And I feel like that's sort of the same with Delver. Like, Delver can beat it. It probably does beat it more often than not, but it's not an auto win.
Yeah, definitely not an auto win.
When you have such... But for them, they have a lot of auto wins. So, like, I just cannot envision... Like, Mono Blue Control, I just don't think can beat myself. It just doesn't seem possible.
Well, I mean, Mono Blue Control needs the turn one Delver. If they don't have the turn one Delver, then it's going to be very, very hard to beat Esper Sage.
Yeah, it's got to be this, like, tempoing aspect of it. And so they have a lot of, like, basically free wins.
Yep.
And when you have a ton of free wins and somewhat percentage matches against everyone else, like, I think that's a good enough reason to play it. The problem with it is it's a hard deck to play, with a lot of clicking, and it's really boring to play. Like, I was fiddling around with the version with Urza Lands, and I showed it to you, and I think the deck was actually, like, okay. I just stopped working with it, because I just don't want to win with it. Like, when I'm winning, I'm like, this is the worst.
Yeah. All right, so let's get on and talk about our premier events. So we've got the first premier event that we're going to talk about, and this is the first one that was listed on Wizards' website. Was the winner was Jack Sad. He won with playing the very aggressive version of Delver, which is the 16 island version. So what do you think about that?
Well, it's got to work for him. He continues to win all the time. So in the last, like, I think he's pretty recently new to Pauper, and he wins all the time.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's how new he is or whatever, but yeah, he's utterly crushing with this deck. And, you know, I tried out this exact copy of this deck, and I can't win with it. It's I always end up mulliganing myself into oblivion because I think the land count is still too low. So I took this deck and I made some changes to it, including upping the island count and getting rid of Cloudfin Raptors and Bone Splitters. And so we'll talk about my deck a little bit later.
So he plays really aggressively, though. Like, I mean, when I played against him, like when I play against, like, Mezzel or something like that, they finished the game with like a lot of cards in hand. They barely ever tapped out. You know, it's it's really quite a control-ish feel. While I'm getting beat up, but this guy, he tapped out all the time, played all his dudes out there really quickly, and by the end of the game, I mean, I lost to him 2-1. I know I beat him one game. He crushed me the next, and then in game three, it got to a point where if I can resolve a spell, I win, and he has no cards in the hand, so he untaps, passes, I cast something, he counters it, and then I have like another turn, and so I pass, he draws, passes go, and I play something else and he counters it. So he like had to back-to-back counter me off the top. Yeah. And I haven't really seen that playstyle. It's like very rare I ever see Delver players get down to no cards in the hand in the middle of the game. Like I see it, you know, I turn like 10 or 12, but
yep.
When I've exhausted the resources, but it was kind of surprising. So he's a different style player.
It's maybe that's how I was while I was playing this deck wrong. Maybe I'm supposed to tap out and throw all my spells away.
It may have just been his best lines in those instances.
Yeah, that's probably that could be true too. But I disagree with the 16 lands. I think it's too few, and so that's what I did with that deck. In second place, we've got Is It Control, which is interesting.
Maybe I'm going to write an article on my thoughts on this deck next week.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it has to... I mean, I'm working on sort of not really a theory. I guess it is a theory, but it's something like everyone does all the time when they build decks, in Limited and whatnot. But I think this deck is really new. And it's got a few holes in it, I think. Because it's a little rougher on the edges. So yeah. I'm going to try to improve upon it by using some theories.
That's cool. Yeah, and this deck seems like it wants to be, like, it doesn't know if it wants to be tap-out control or counter-control. That's my biggest problem with it, I think.
That is exactly my original problem with it. The first lists I saw were, like, really gross in that regards. Like, they had accumulated knowledge and compulsive research.
Yeah.
And it's like, accumulated knowledge is a card I can get behind in like Rick P. Delver, where it's like a control-ish Delver, where they're always leaving two mana up. And so you don't play something they want to counter, end of turn, they'll accumulate knowledge. Maybe they don't draw a bunch, but you know, over time it amounts up to something. I don't see like any reason to play accumulated knowledge and compulsive research in the same deck, because you're like, when would you ever do that? Like, turn 5 is the first turn you can hold, like, compulsive and hold up accumulated knowledge. And this is, like, slightly progressing in the direction I like, but it still has some issues along those lines.
See, and I still like accumulated knowledge over compulsive research in this list.
I might, too. I don't really care one way or another if you're going accumulated or compulsive. I just don't like them both together.
Yeah. All right. In third place, we've got Affinity, and, that's Affinity. We really need an expert on the show on Affinity, somebody who plays it a lot, because every time I play Affinity, I just lose. So
there's a couple of decks like that. I feel like the world would be better served if someone who likes to play those decks would, like, step forward and, like, talk about them more.
Yeah.
And Affinity is one of those. I mean, there's so many people playing Affinity at all times. And yet, I see so little written on them. You know, nothing is said about it.
I feel like it's a deck that has more play to it than I'm seeing. Like, I mean, my basic gist of how I see Affinity is play things, turn them sideways, and then Perilous Research and Thought Cast into more things, and, you know, eventually win that way.
Yeah. I think the one thing to note is his use of white in this deck. He's playing... 4 Ancient Dens for to splash his Journey of Nowheres out of the sideboard. Nice. Which is interesting, because you usually see that type of thing for black to splash Doomblade.
Yes. Maybe he's got tired of getting garried out or something? I don't know.
Could be.
But...
yeah, it's got to be in response to the mono-black matchup, but it's something I haven't really seen before.
Yep. In fourth place, we have Mono Blue Control, which is the same, pretty much the same standard list as we've been seeing with Mono Blue Control.
Yeah, I played against this guy in the second daily, and I managed to pull off a win against him. But his he plays pretty well. He plays, you know, the standard way of once they get up to two mana, there's not another turn you have where they're not drawing cards or countering something if you don't play some, or they're drawing cards if you don't play something and countering it if you do. So
yeah, I like Mono Blue Control. It's a deck I've been playing a lot recently in 8-mans, so
it's it seems like he's running fewer counter spells than normal, though.
No, this is pretty standard nowadays. Normally we run 4 miscalculations, but he's running a prohibit instead of the 4th miscalculation, so he's running the same amount as normal.
1, 4, 8, so just 12? I always thought it was a lot more than that.
Yeah, you think it is, but that's just because the deck is always drawing so many cards that they're always going to have, it seems like they're always going to have a counterspell, and then, like, Exclude can sometimes draw you a counterspell off the card.
So what's the, and maybe you can answer me this, why Seagate Oracle? That card, like, I love when my opponents play that against me, because that usually means that they're not going to play something else, that, or they're not going to hold up counter magic, and so I have a turn to do whatever I want.
Yeah, there's a, mainly it's to block ninjas and goblins is the primary reason you play Seagate. But, I mean, it replaces itself. It's, you know, it digs too deep and fetches you a card. So overall, it's just a nice card to have.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, pretty standard list there.
Yep. And then we have another Affinity player in fifth. In sixth place, we have Esper Sage, Misha from Pauper Revolution. Shout out to Misha. And then in seventh, we have Megaphone, as you were talking about earlier. Interesting thing about his list, he's running Funeral Charms in it. Funeral Charms.
Yeah, that's a card I've thought about, and it seems pretty good. It seems better than the Piracy. Well, I mean, it is Piracy Charm, right? But in a lot of ways, it seems sort of better in a deck like this, because all of his creatures can use it as a pump spell. Whereas in, like, Delver or something, it's kind of funny to play because half of your creatures will just die to it, so you can't pump them.
Yeah.
It also the discarding is just much more relevant with a Funeral Charm, because, you know, you can get them down to Hellbent, and then draw step, Funeral Charm them.
Yeah, so sometimes it works like a Time Walk, and it's pretty nice. It also combos really well with Kumbai Witches.
Yeah.
Kill two toughness things.
If you're expecting a meta of X1s, then it's probably better than Disfigure.
Yep. Probably. But he is running four Disfigures, too, so. Like, his list, I view this guy's list as pretty much like anti-Delver list.
Yeah.
It's got the four Disfigures, two Funeral Charms. Yeah, it's pretty nice. And then finally in 8th place we've got the Ultra Greedy Tron deck, which is running no colored mana sources, lands, I should say, by Daniel CHL. So what do you think about this variation of Tron? I've seen a few Tron players running this variation now. Or they're running...
I guess I don't really see what the appeal is that much. Like, I don't love the mana base in the other one, so I can see why you'd want to get rid of it, but to me, the no land version is more just like, look what I can do!
Yeah. look how greedy I can be.
The mana Silex is cute. I'm sure that this works. It's just really like, what do you do if they have Ancient Grudge?
Yes.
You know, you're a big problem. Totally reliant upon Spheres and Stars.
Yeah, Sphere of Stars, Silexes, and Prophetic Prisms are... I mean, he's got 16 mana-fixing sources. So, it's working for him, obviously.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get your opinion on that. But I do love his Rest for the Weary in the sideboard. That's a very nice card to have against Burn.
Yeah, I saw Peter Runs Magic or whatever had 3 as well. He had the white tech, too. I guess I just haven't been paying attention.
Oh. All right. So there we go.
For move over to the next one.
For the next one, we have an Affinity player placing in top in the first place. I did watch replays of this. He didn't actually place in first place. They split. So that was sad. So we've got Affinity, and then we've got, in second place, we've got another Izzet Control deck. So, you know, Izzet Control has to be a thing, apparently.
Yeah, it's the same list. It's like the exact...
Yeah, it's...
pretty much exactly the same.
It is the exact 75. Exact same as 75. In third place, we've got Raging Flump on Esper Sage. Fourth place, we've got another Mono Blue Control, which is pretty much the same list that we already discussed. In fifth place, we have Hexproof. What do you think about Hexproof's place in the meta right now?
Seems okay. I mean, I guess I just don't really have an opinion on it. I mean, Mono Black is pretty low. It has a fine Delver matchup.
That
I don't
does.
Think it's. I don't think it's like good or bad, really.
No, it's pretty good. It's an okay matchup. Like, right, it's for Delver, it's certainly not a buy. You have to be very, very careful and choose which things to counter appropriately. And sometimes they have hands that you can't counter all the important things that they play. So they will win just based on that sometimes.
But to me, it's an inconsistent deck. I just don't really like its position very well because in a premier event, because I just don't think you're gonna run into a matchup you don't like. That happens to everyone, you know. You're gonna run into a matchup or two from metagaming, and that's about all the losses you can afford in a premier event, is to run into your bad matchups. And then you really just can't afford to lose to your deck, and that's what happens here. Like, they have, aside from Infect, they're the deck that mulligans the most against me.
Yeah. Because you have to have a creature, right? You have to have a hexproof creature, and you have to have, like, you know, the right mana and the right enchantments to throw on that hexproof creature. So you have very, like, you have, like, five cards you have to have in every hand.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you'd think it would mulligan the same amount as Infect, but I think Infect just, like, is just greedier on all aspects, sort of. Here, because it's two color, they're like, they understand that they need to add some lands and stuff like that. So it's, you know, but regardless, I mean, whichever one mulligans more, they both mulligan a lot. And if you're mulliganing a ton in a 6-round event, you're going to eventually mulligan yourself out of the game. And that's a free loss for yourself every game you're signing up or every time you put 10 tickets in. So I guess that's my biggest contention, is it's just not a consistent enough deck for me to wind up to play it in a premier event.
Yeah, it's like, imagine that you're every time you hit enter, you start off this premier event at 0-1.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then, you know, assuming you have to be at least 4-2 to place in the top 8, then, you know, you start to lose some value there. All right. Yeah, so Hexproof, not the greatest, but I mean, if you're comfortable with it, you know, like let's say Deluxekov, I wouldn't mind. I don't see you not entering if that's the deck you're most comfortable with.
Yeah, I mean, comfort really goes a long way. If you're comfortable enough to make it so that the rest of the tournament you go 4-1, then by all means, go ahead and play. You'll top 8.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's that's a tall... ask. I mean, that's a 80% win percentage.
Yeah, it's... Well, but yeah, I think it's actually pretty well placed right now. Mono Black seems to be dying down a fair amount. So the Crypt Rats number has been at an all-time low. So...
Yeah, I think it's well placed. I just don't think I'd play it, I guess.
Yeah. Fair enough. In sixth place, we have a very interesting take on Mono Blue Control.
Yeah, I played against this guy too at one point, and I don't know, I wasn't in love with his deck, but he did well. I mean, in tournaments after I played him, so.
Yeah, he's running the what's his name? Channel Fireball
Chris,
guy.
Chris Davis.
Yeah, the Chris Davis variation of the deck, which has Serrated Arrows and Snake Forms and Serum Visions instead of, you know, better cards. I think we've discussed Serum Visions ad nauseum before.
Yeah. I mean, I just, there's a lot of like glaring choices in here that I'm really like surprised by. I think the biggest one to me is no miscalc, which is really strange and unique. But actually, I shouldn't even say that. That's not the biggest one. The biggest one for me is no Lunas Grace.
Like, oh yeah.
That card, it, to me, is like the way Mono Blue closes the door on you. You know, you get to a point in the game where they have like six mana out and like three cards in hand, and you're like, okay, you know, I could try to go forth this turn and play like three spells, but what if those are all three counter spells? You know, and you're like, I won't do it. And then they're like, Lunar's Grace, end of turn, discarding land. Lunar's Grace, end of turn, discarding land. And you're like, oh no, I missed my window.
Yeah.
You know, and then next turn you're like, okay, well, now it could all be counter spells. So.
Yeah, now it's definitely all counter spells. So I have to wait until he has like, you know, eight mana and like five cards in hand, and then I can slip in five spells through his counter spells, right?
Yeah, and it's a card you need one of in your whole deck. Like, it's not that big of a impact, you know? So it's kind of strange to me that he does that. And he has a very, like, I'm seeing a much bigger emphasis in these mono blue control lists on managing the board than I have in a while. Back when this deck was like the king of the format, back, I don't know, this was years and years ago. So long ago. Most people wouldn't, like, the format was, like, goblins and mono blue control, and it was just a miserable format, but some people really liked it. And then it was just, like, their deck was just all counterspells, and, like, Spire Golems, and I think that was it. Delver didn't exist, obviously, so it's just, like, four Spire Golems, and they didn't have much of an emphasis on controlling the board.
Yeah,
but that's really gone up, which is interesting.
Yeah, and you kind of have to, right? With in the face of, you know, other Delver decks, right? The fairies decks, you have to be able to control those, and you know, weenie decks are just not very prevalent right now. I'm not really sure why, but they're not very prevalent right now. So you need to be able to control those, though, because you can't beat a swarm, right? Your Spire Golem can block a guy, but you know, if you're at six life and they have four creatures on board, then the Spire Golems, you're still going to die, even if you do land a Spire Golem.
So, I agree. Yeah. The thing that I think is interesting, though, is that the swarm strategies just aren't present these days. Like, I'm seeing this downtick in counter magic in exchange for board presence, and the only thing I see that a value for is, like, Delver's the only, like, sort of swarm strategy that exists, and I personally wouldn't really want a Frostbird, a weird Omen Speaker, or a Seagate Oracle against Delver, besides blocking ninjas. And the rest, like, those cards just seem kind of silly to me. I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think they're necessary, though, because if you encounter things like Stompy, you're going to want these blockers that they have to pump to get past. And you only have four Spire Golems in your deck, and if they're Ancient Grudging or Gleeful Sabotaging your Spire Golem, then you want alternatives.
Yeah, I see the value there, but it's just interesting to note, I think, that over time it's shifted away from, like, Drago to now they actually do tap out occasionally.
Yeah. All right, well, in seventh place we have Deluxekov running the green one deck.
Yeah, and to me this is the type of deck I'd rather play over Hexproof right now. I mean, it's because it is, I mean, I still think this deck might be too inconsistent for me to want to play it, and I did write about that, but it does minimize the amount of inconsistencies as opposed to Hexproof. When you do assemble Voltron, it's not quite as powerful as it is in Hexproof, but you don't just auto-lose if you don't assemble it, and it's basically something he and I and you have been working on, where we're trying to sort of fuse Stompy and Hexproof together in a way that makes it so that it's more challenging for mono black decks to interact with you on, and it's your threats are like super versatile, and they're super cheap, so you can get under and out of Delver.
Yeah. And then once you have, you know, once you have a Bone Splitter and a Deluxekov opted for Flayer Husks now in his deck. You know, once you have a couple of those guys out, then every single creature you play becomes a 4-something, you know, a 4-1 or a 4-2, sorry. I can't math right now. But, and the Flayer Husk is nice because anytime you equip it to another creature, then the Germ token dies and you can activate Morbid on Hunger of the Howl Pack. So you can make each of your creatures, like, potentially become a Voltron every time you draw a creature. So the deck's really, really nice. I played it in one of the first Premier events, and I didn't do so hot with it, but also ran into multiple Affinity players, so there was that.
Yeah, Affinity is probably the worst matchup.
Yeah.
You can still beat them, though, which is kind of cool. I think I'm 50-50 against them, and the way you do it is you just load up your Ledge Walkers and your Vault Scourges with Hungers. Ideally, your Ledge Walker, because then they can't Gale Blast the Vault Scourge out of the sky. But and then it's a race, you know, after that. So
yeah. So that was pretty cool to see him placed in the top 8 there. And then finally, we have another Hexproof list. And, well, we've already talked about Hexproof ad nauseum, so move on to the next one.
Nothing special in that list. In fact, it might be the exact same list.
So the third premier event, we have Saru Cuckoo won the event playing Delver Fiend.
And who would have expected that, you know?
Yeah. I played this guy. This is the guy I lost to in the premier event. This is the same premier event that I placed in. So I played him in the top 4, and we went to the third game on turn 12, 15, 17, something like that. And he finally was able to sneak a Kiln Fiend on the board. He was at a very, very low life total, and I was tapped out attacking him because that was my best route of victory, was to attack him and Pyroblast his dude, or not Pyroblast, Hydroblast his counterspells, or his Kiln Fiend. I attempted to, and he Pyroblasted. I spell stuttered, he electrickeried in response to the spell stutter trigger, so he got me with the Kiln Fiend. So, yeah, his list is very, very interesting because it's much more focused pre-board on control.
Yeah, I actually really like it. I think it's, it illustrates, like, a lot. Well, I mean, I've talked to you about this. This guy has been the Delver Fiend player since before Cyclops existed. Like, he's been bashing me in the face with Kiln Fiends for over a year now. And I actually just figured out that he's a Japanese player last night. I have a follower on Twitter, and he writes, too. So if you... It's hard to read him unless you know Japanese, but you can translate it on Google. And it's surucuckoo.diarynote.jp if you want to read it. And I'm... He knows this deck list better than anyone else, and there's not very much in the way of literature on this deck. Most people just are like, oh, it's a joke. But clearly it's something he likes to do and has been doing for a long time and has had some success with. And so there's some kind of funny inclusions in here, like Piracy Charm. But to me, that just illustrates that here's a guy who knows how his mana works in his deck, and that he's much more likely to have an excess island up than an excess mountain up. So he's going to use the removal spell that he can actually cast, as opposed to a lot of other players who might just move to Chain Lightning there or something else. So I think his list is really indicative of a guy who's played this list a lot and has fiended people from all sorts of life totals.
I think Piracy Charm actually has a really sweet interaction here in this deck in particular, is the Island Walk ability, right?
Oh, it has every mode on this thing is totally relevant. I mean, pumping your own guy before you Assault Strobe it? Yes, please.
Yeah. So he's got that, and then Island Walk is super relevant, right? Because sometimes as an Elver player, I'm like, all right, well, you know what? I can leave back my Spire Golem to block his Kiln Fiend. I just need to make sure that I counter his evasion spells, you know, I need to make sure that I counter his artful dodges or whatever. And, you know, and then he has, like, three evasion spells in his hand with Piracy Charm. So, like, he has, you know, the Shatter Rift, the Piracy Charm, and the Apostle's Blessing. And, you know, I can't counter them all, for one thing. Or, so, or maybe I've seen the Apostle's Blessing so that I know I can leave back a Delver and a Spire Golem, and he can only give it protection from one thing, and I have another, you know. So, like, Piracy Charm is just very nice in this deck. It also fights the opponent's turn one Delver. You know, you can just Piracy Charm and kill my turn one Delver. So, all three modes are super active on Piracy Charm, which I really like. And he's got another Piracy Charm in the sideboard, too, for that very reason.
Yeah. The interesting thing to note is his deck only has three Assault Strobes and doesn't have any of the commonplace evasion spells, so he doesn't have the one you just mentioned, the flashback one, or the rebound one, which a lot of players play.
Yep.
He's going slowly with Shadow Rift, which is an interesting choice, because it's probably the one I see played the least of those.
Yeah, it probably is.
But to me, I think it's one of the best, you know? Like, that's... Shadow Rift's the only one of those where if that's in your hand, but you don't have a Fiend or a Cyclops out, you can still, like, try to find the thing you need, because you Shadow Rift your opponent's card, draw your own card, and then you can start digging to the pieces you need. The other ones are just, like, unless you're in a position where you're going to win right then and now, they're just dead cards.
Yeah. And then also he's main decking Dispels, too, which is something I believe that all these Delver Fiend players should be doing.
Yeah, I agree. They take care of Edicts, they take care of Doomblades, they kind of counter magic. Every deck that you care about, Dispel is good against.
Yeah. So, yeah, very, very nice list. I'll be playing with this list next week, I think. That's when I'm going to be doing it for Pure. So, I'll test it out. You know, despite my affinity for, I've mentioned before that I very much dislike this deck, but I'm going to be testing it because I like this guy's version of the deck, and it seems really nice to me. It caught my eye as, hey, this deck's actually pretty sweet. Let's check it out. In second place, we've got Tron, and this is the not-so-greedy version of Tron. I played against this guy in the Swiss, beat him pretty handily. I got lucky in game 3, though, where I mulliganed, like, to 5 or something, and I just drew all the right cards to beat him. So.
So your luck evened out, you're saying.
Yeah. I think he mulliganed in, like, game 2 or something as well, so. It was only down to 6, but it makes a big difference with Tron whenever they mulligan, because, like, they don't really mulligan well, I don't think. Especially on their lands, right? If they're stuck on one land for a while, they just lose.
Yeah, I agree.
They're still
running the Calmly Garden, and I'm just still not a fan of it.
Yeah, it's
too cute. I mean, I tried it when I was working on Blue Green Fissure Post, and it was in there for a little bit, you know, and I had a reason for it. It was to try to crop rotation into a blocker to beat Infect, you know, like snap a blocker out if they decide to pump. And then F6. So, like, I had a reason to play it, and it still, like, was bad. Just was not worth my time, and I see no reason to play it now. Like, having a blocker is, like, okay, but...
It occasionally blocks a ninja, and that's about it. That's what it does.
Just doesn't seem, like, worth having a tap line to do that.
Yeah. I totally agree. I hate Colony Garden in this deck. I'd rather just have a forest.
And the other interesting thing is he's running Capsize, which is it's not something I see very often out of them, and it's kind of a difficult thing to cast in this deck.
Yeah, it's going to be very hard. It's going to be very hard to cast in this deck. But he is running, I think, the original list of these only had one island, or so maybe it's a little bit easier to cast Capsize, but no, I can't see him really consistently casting Capsize there. I think I'd rather just have the fourth Ancient Stirrings is what it looks like he cut, or the Fangorn Marauder, or Mole Drifter.
Yeah.
Any number of these cards I'd rather have than Capsize.
Yeah, and it does look like he opted to remove a Mole Drifter for a Compulsive Research, because they usually run one Compulsive,
okay.
I see.
Yep.
But I do like I do like that, actually, because that tells me that he has figured out that his deck on turn three wants to evoke a Moldrifter more often than not. And so having the Compulsive Research is a better evoked Moldrifter.
Okay, that's fair enough. All right. So moving on to third place is me.
It's you. Yeah. So this deck is just total garbage. Never play it.
Yeah, I totally agree. It worked out very well for me. So, as I said before, I added the 17th island because I just too many hands were getting mulliganed. And cutting Cloudfin Raptors and Bone Splitters from the main deck, and I had replaced them with two Excludes and a Logic Knot.
How'd the Logic Knot pan out?
It was more often than not just a counterspell, which was very nice. Yeah. Had to exile a few cards from your graveyard. And what I found was that with all the times that I'm, you know, pondering and preordaining on turn one, and that Logic Knot just more often than not had plenty of fuel to counterspell. It was, I think it came awkward one time during the Swiss where I was up against Tron and it was a very late game and I top decked a Logic Knot, but it was fine, right? Usually if I get the late game with Tron, I'm dead anyway. Because they have a million mana out and they can do things like Moldrifter, and I just have to hope that I have the counterspell. So, Logic Knot, more often than not, was just very good, and it was a counterspell that didn't set me back on tempo. And that was what I was seeing a lot with Deprive, was I was just losing so much tempo whenever I had to Deprive.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes Deprive, I'm like, oh, great, I'm actually really happy you did that.
Yeah. The tempo setback is pretty huge. But more importantly, the Excludes were just a godsend. I definitely would not have made top 8 if it weren't for Excludes.
It's a good card. I mean, it's a very good card. Not a card everyone can play. But yeah, I mean, I love it as a 2-of in pretty much any blue deck.
Yeah, it's just, I was up against, it just helped out so much in the Moldrifter matchups, right? Where they're like, okay, well, if I Moldrifter him this turn, then he has to top deck counterspell again next turn to beat my next Moldrifter, but if I exclude them, that just really wrecks their plans of trying to Moldrifter me out. Because, like, oh my god, he just excluded. Oh my god, that's the worst feeling in the world.
Yeah. any creature, like, when you're playing one of those games where, and not against Delver, but against Mono Blue Control, it's easiest to visualize, where, like, on turn two, you play something, they counter it. Okay, well, now, like, you're at parity in card size. So then next turn, you play another spell, they counter it. Okay, you're still at parity. You know, like, this parity continues until you get excluded. And then right when that exclude happens, the parity is shifted immediately in their favor. They stay at the same card size. You go down one, and now it's an uphill battle for you the rest of the game. And that's a very powerful effect to have. And in your deck, more often than not, like, you're probably lower on cards in hand, but you're, like, way ahead in board presence. And so now this card, like, stops them from gaining board presence and gives you another card to hopefully next turn stop them from gaining board presence, and that's just equally as huge of an effect. It's kind of like it's like a bounce effect almost, that where you draw a card, it's like, so it's a huge tempo hit in your type of deck, and I'm surprised I don't see more excludes in non-Mezzel Delver type decks.
Deck performed amazingly for me, and I'm very happy that I went with this iteration of it. That's for sure. And real quick to go over the rest of the top 8 here before we close this out. We've got another Esper Sage deck, Raging Flump. Killabee's Mono Blue Control, which we've already talked about. Then we've got Vhagar's Affinity, which he's running Raises and Standard Bearers in the sideboard. That's pretty sweet.
I do actually have a question for you. On the Unraging Flumps list.
Okay.
Why is he playing Seat of the Synod?
I don't know. I have no idea. Oh, you know why? It's because he has Divine Offering in his sideboard.
So he can blow his own land to gain nothing?
Not Divine Offering. Where is it? I have no idea why he's playing Seat of the Synod. That doesn't make any sense. I thought it was because of Divine Offering, but obviously not.
So, yeah, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I don't think having main deck artifact hate or something that can, like, you know, amount as artifact hate is a bad thing. And so then to just make it so that you can randomly get mized out by that seems very bizarre.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he likes the art on them. That's all I can figure.
Yes.
So then we already talked about Killaby's mono blue control.
Yeah.
And then we have Vhagar.
Yeah, okay. Any player beat me. These Sun Chasers are surprisingly annoying. And they must be a nod towards Delver. Generally, I hate them. But
yeah.
I guess they worked for him today.
Obviously they did. Only one fling, though, which I can't agree with. Sorry, you need two flings in your deck. Then we've got another Esper Sage player. Nothing really interesting about his list, I should say.
And he doesn't have Seeds of the Synod, so it's not a normal inclusion.
Yeah. So that's good. Good on him for not having Seeds of the Synod. And then we finally got Jack Sad in 8th place. Running the same old Delver. Actually, Jack Sad modified this list a little bit. He's got Boomerangs in the sideboard now.
That must be for the Familiar Storm matchup.
Yes, it is. And if you ever Boomerang a Karu land, it sucks so much for them.
Yeah, Delver's one of the few decks that can like take advantage of that type of tempo as well.
Yeah, for sure.
By the time you Boomerang, like if you turn to Boomerang them, you could easily have 4 power out on the board, 5 power if you turn 1 Delver, blind flip it, Cloud of Fairies, like, and then Boomerang their land. They can't win
dead.
That.
They're just dead. Alright, so I gotta close this out. Where can we get a hold of you, David?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm ShafeWaffa5 there. I do the ThoughtCast series at mtgostrat.com. Or you can find me on Magic Online, and I'm ShafeWaffa5 there as well.
Alright. I'm Chris. You can contact me on Twitter at cweaver8518. I write for Pure MTGO every week. Usually it's Pauper. This week it's actually going to be Theros Block Constructed, but find me on Pure MTGO every week. And then on Magic Online, I am cweaver. You can get in contact with me there. Sorry if you guys have been getting in contact with me recently here. I've been very, very busy on Magic Online and, you know, juggling, you know, the kids needing diaper changes and stuff like that. So I will have try to make more time for you guys if you contact me. And that's about it. So thank you guys for listening. This has been Combatant Poppercast.